When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Now is the time to shine, everybody. Welcome to the Football Ramble. It's the big one. England versus France tomorrow night in the World Cup quarterfinal. I'm Marcus Speller.
And I'm simply Luke Moore.
Bloody hell, it's nearly here, Luke Moore. England versus France in the quarterfinal of the World Cup. Ah, dearie me, the nerves are creeping up.
I know, it's great, isn't it? We have the schedule for the World Cup Ramble episodes planned out by our amazing production team weeks in advance. Mm. And then the other day when I got back from being away, I was just like to you and to the producer, Finn, I was like, should we do an extra show, just you and me for the England game? So excited. No one else is bothered. Everyone's like, oh, I've got loads of work to do. And we were like, let's do it.
Here we are. My goodness. I have to keep reminding myself, I like football. I enjoy football. If England lose, you know, it doesn't really matter, blah, 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 blah. Because right now it feels like this is weighing heavy on the mind.
I feel like... You can take this piece of information as a compliment or not, depending on how you want to look at it, Marcus. But I think you traditionally have been someone who has been the most affected by an England result of anyone I know.
Really?
So, but do you think that's? But has that dampened over the years as you've grown older?
Yes, it has. Okay. And actually, do you know what? Watching the Euros final in the stadium has actually. It does give you a massive perspective on it. Obviously, I think I said, I think my words were very, very close to something along the lines of, you know, the next day, everything, the world is the same, no matter if you win or lose kind of thing. You kind of have to see that perspective in light of such a monumental thing. I think, though, the reason why this feels so big is the World Cup is bigger than the Euros. Now, obviously, if England had won the Euros, it would have been fantastic. But England have not played a team who, on paper and according to the bookies, are better than them, really. Italy in the final of the Euros would be the closest thing. But I think because England had the home advantage, although home advantage is actually, I think, overplayed often if you look at tournament results in the modern era, that would be the closest thing. But it does feel to me that Gareth Southgate's time in charge of England, it's almost sort of, if you like, been building up to this moment, or certainly this tournament. I mean, the FA had 2022 marked down as the one that they wanted to really have a proper go at, realistically. And I think they said this, 10 years ago or whenever it was. And of course, we all thought that they were ahead of schedule when the final of the Euros happened. But it was to win that major tournament because it's been so bloody long, of course. And England against France, it's huge. And I would say that history is on England's side, though. They have only lost once to France in a major tournament over the years. They've played in five major tournament meetings. Although some people might say that will have nothing to do with what happens on Saturday night. Something that might have even less to do on Saturday night is, since 1998, England's win rate for World Cup matches live on the BBC is 75%, whereas on ITV, which is, of course, for those who are not in the UK, a prominent terrestrial channel, it's only 18.75%. England did beat Senegal when playing on ITV, Luke. So what would you like to say to all of that?
Well, the game is on ITV tomorrow. So, yeah. I mean, I'm the one who put that stat in there because I know how much you'd love it. But I also am now going to flip it on you and say I don't think it matters a thing, obviously. I think...
Get it on Channel 5.
Yeah, get Julesy on Channel... Actually, no, don't get with Julesy.
Yeah,
bloody
terrible
hell,
win rate. They have one on Channel 4.
Even worse. Yeah. I don't think any of this stuff necessarily matters. I think that, you know, the media of which we are a part, we have to remember that, like the stats, like to be able to tell the stories with the different stats. There's no realistic way you can say that there's any decent effect. The fact that England perhaps lost to France in, what was it, 2004 or something, and then, you know, drew with them in 2012, whatever, you know, the crossover isn't of players is sometimes non-existent and sometimes very, 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 very small. So to me, it doesn't matter. I was interested in all the things you said there about the idea that the quality of England's opponents, in particularly in knockout games in tournaments under Gareth Southgate, because that's something that Lars said on Thursday, and I do understand why Lars said it, and I do understand why it's a talking point, but I don't really know how it pertains to what Gareth Southgate and the team are doing, but chiefly because they have no choice in this. They don't get to choose who they play. And so they can only play what's in front of them. And I would also say this. If England were to beat France tomorrow, which of course we hope they do, there will be reasons why aspects of public life and sections of the media will say, well, it's, you know, France, but, you know, Conte wasn't there, you know, they didn't have Benzema, and, you know, Pogba was injured. Yeah, exactly. So there's always a reason to have a negative side of the coin, come what may. I mean, you're always going to get people using it, naysayers doing that kind of stuff. And so I think, and exactly that happened with Lars on the same show. I mean, obviously, he's not here to defend himself, so I'm not going to slag him off because he's a good friend of mine. But he said the same about Germany. Oh, well, they beat Germany in the knockout. And but Germany, look at Germany's record. Look at this about Germany. Look at that. Just not a great German side. So, I mean, you know, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, really. So I don't think England will spend that much time thinking about that. But what I do think is, you know, this is a very, very evenly matched game. I said it last time I was on with you, Marcus. I think it's a 50-50 game. I think the probability guys, all the data number crunchers, all the numbers bods, all the absolute nerds.
Call them boffins.
All the boffins with their numbers, I think, have France as a 39% chance to win in 90 minutes, and England is 31%, something like that, with a draw being the rest of the time. So it's a very, very close matched affair, and I think it comes down to whoever manages the game well and manages the occasion and all the rest of it, as ever in these types of games.
Yeah, so you've, with regards to the data and stats there, you've gone for a more scientific approach. Can I bring in a bit of pseudoscience? Might be very generous to call it that, because a TikToker named Keen, who claims to be a time traveller, has announced that England will win the game 2-1. However, a different time traveller has shared footage of Brazil beating France in the final. Looked eerily similar to that 1998 final, with some major edit points, but no, I don't know.
Different timelines, mate.
To be honest,
it could all be true.
Unsurprisingly, I didn't bother to watch it.
if you believe in the multiverse theory of existence, then it could be different timelines. But look,
so what you're saying is, if England lose in our timeline, we should actually celebrate, because another timeline they might have won.
Well, what they would say is that every single thing that is possible under the known laws of physics happens at somewhere, at some point, all the time. So you can rest assured that at some place, somewhere else, a different timeline, England have won every single World Cup that's ever been held.
Bloody hell, get the flags out, everybody. Get the
bunting
up. But also,
on the pseudoscience part, you know, for it to be pseudoscience, it has to have some kind of rooted base in an idea that's scientific.
Yeah,
you know,
well, England are playing France.
This is a virgin on TikTok trying to get attention. And I know in some ways people would say we're, you know, overgrown virgins on podcasts trying to get attention, but I feel like they're worse.
Well, indeed, yeah. I mean, what we should do is bring it all the way back to the actual game and what actually may happen.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's talk about it's a back three or a back four. That's the big chat. Should England go with back three or back four? And if it is, or whatever it is, should I say, Kyle Walker will start the game because he's going to be crucial for England because he's the man that people think will chiefly deal with Kylian Mbappe. Old Ari Redknapp, your old mate down in Portsmouth, said, if I could choose any right back from any team in the world against Mbappe, I would choose Kyle Walker. To be fair to old Redders, it's a realistic shout, is it not? Because with Walker's pace and his experience in the game, you think to yourself, yeah, he can at times keep up with Mbappe, although Mbappe is about 10 years younger than him.
Yeah, we need a fully fit, match fit, ready to go Kyle Walker. And we saw evidence in the game against Senegal that he's still finding his feet after an injury. And it's absolutely crucial that he is hitting the numbers and that he is at the peak of his powers for this game. I don't actually disagree with Redknapp, although Redknapp's kind of comments maybe speak to the fact that perhaps he just doesn't know that many right backs in world football because he's older now, and that's fair enough. I don't actually know of that many right backs who are still doing their thing that have the experience and the track record and the ability and the fitness and the pace and all the things that you need that Kyle Walker's got. And if he plays well, it really could be the difference. There's other issues to think about, though, in that back line. There's been talk coming out of the England camp that John Stones had to miss a bit of training and will need to be assessed ahead of the game. And he's listed as doubtful by Opta. So I don't know who's going to come in instead of him if he can't make it. And that's a really difficult decision for Southgate to make because he needs to go, if I want to have the best chance of keeping Kylian Mbappe quiet, I need Walker fully fit and firing. Mm. If I don't have Stones fully fit, I need to make a decision about whether I risk him or not against a really good team. And then you can Marcus, I'll throw it back at you. You can loop that back round to, again, the discussion the guys had on Thursday, David, Andy and Lars, about this idea of a back three. Do you say belt and braces, I'll put Kyle Walker on the right of a back three and have Trippier ahead of him? Because you might get a lot of joy, as the guy said, with the two French fullbacks who, you know, particularly Hernandez, who's going to play, Theo Hernandez, who really, I've not really seen any decent evidence that he enjoys defending or that he can do it. So there's lots of things to take into account. And these are the decisions that will play into whether England win or not. And if the decisions are right and they're proven to be right, England have got a really good chance. If not, they'll get beaten.
Yeah, so this will potentially worry people. But if John Stones is injured and he doesn't play, which would be a huge blow for England, it would be Eric Dier coming in. And the reason for that is because Eric Dier has played minutes at this tournament. If you look elsewhere in that England squad, the other centre-half is Connor Cody. And poor old Cody's never going to get any minutes, really. But, you know, he's there for the vibes and the bants. And he does that superbly well. And Steve Holland, or to give him his full name, Stephen Netherlands, says that Connor Cody was the most important player in the squad in the Euros because of...
But he can play. I mean, we can't patronise the guy. He can play.
But of course he can. But Eric Dier has come on for Maguire in the first game and came on against who was the other one? Was it even Senegal or was it maybe Wales? I forget now. But he's come on.
I think it was Senegal. It might have been. Yeah.
But if Stones isn't there, would England play a back four with Dier and Maguire in the centre? I think that would potentially worry a few people, all joking aside, because they've not had the best times recently at club level, it's fair to say. But they could go to a back three and Dier can play that sweeper role. Maguire would then take up his position on the left side of that three, which he's used to, and Kyle Walker would go in on the right side of the three. And as you say, Trippier would come in. And defensively, that would look a little bit more solid against the threat of France down the wings. The thing is, though, does that then take away a bit of England's attacking threat? It would be Rice and Bellingham who would play in that midfield, absolutely. I obviously hope that John Stones is fit for a number of reasons, but chiefly because England, if he's there, can play that 4-3-3, which we've seen them play at this tournament. And I'd like them to go toe-to-toe with France.
Same.
And go, all right, let's have you. And as they said on the continent, Andy was making the point, Mbappe and Dembele, they don't like tracking back to defend. And their fullbacks, the French fullbacks, one of whom is not the first choice, of course, are a little bit questionable. at the back. And that is where England get their joy, down the flanks. That is where they are at their strongest, whether it be in the right back position or whether it be either side of Harry Kane. England are very, very strong there. And if you can, I think Phil Foden will start on the left. I think he's got to. And it's on that right side. Who do England pick? You know, Saka's been brilliant. Rashford's, I would probably go with Saka just for a bit of continuity, and I think because of the quality. But I think it would be a shame if England were to be forced into it to play a back three. But Southgate and Holland, they said, Holland was saying that they've planned for this game for 2 years. I mean, let's be honest, in our World Cup predictors, as soon as those groups were made and you saw where the draw could go, the vast majority of people would have had this down as a quarterfinal. And England, you know, this is the day of reckoning, the day of destiny. England are finally playing a side who, again, on paper, and I don't think anyone would dispute that, on paper, are better than England. Not much, but they are. Now, we'll see what happens on grass, of course, because that's where the game is played.
Yeah, I don't,
grass in Qatar.
I don't think I agree with that last statement.
Okay.
I think if you drill it down to the teams that are likely to line up, I don't think France are better than England. I think it's pretty similar.
So do you think England should go 4-3-3 toe-to-toe with them?
I said it a couple of days ago and I still believe it now. They've got to think about what they can do, mm-hmm. and they've got to, if you're alluding to the idea, but the things you said there about Holland and all the rest of it, as in Steve Holland, not the nation of Holland, this is the culmination of the cycle of the squad that Southgate has. And so, because you can take that back to like the idea, like we said earlier, about England not playing or beating anyone good. Well, they lost twice to Belgium in 2018, but they're right at the start of this cycle. We're now 4 years on, and so England now this is the perfect time for them to start thinking about what they can do, particularly given that a lot of France's key players aren't available. I think it's a lot to unpack, but you're right about the front three, really. I think Griezmann gets through a lot of work. Everyone knows that. He's an incredible athlete and has been his whole career, and he's, you know, deserves immense credit. But Giroud can't really work for 90 minutes. He can occupy centre-backs, but he can't work in the modern pressing style for 90 minutes. Dembele and Mbappe aren't interested in doing that. And neither of the full-backs that France play will be the A1 first choice for both of them. So with that in mind, mm-hmm. I mean, that's basically almost the entire team.
Let's have them. Come on.
And then you've got to take into account that, you know, if I said to you, who would you rather have about of Tchouameni and Rabiot or, you know, Henderson, Rice and Bellingham? I think I'd pick Henderson, Rice and Bellingham based on what I've seen in this tournament. So different kettle of fish with a Pogba and Kante in the form there and in 2018, of course, but we're not in 2018. So we have to deal with what's in front of us. It comes down to how England approach it. It comes down to how brave they can be, how confident they are, how good a start they get. All that stuff's important. And then we haven't even talked about the goalkeepers yet. And Lloris has got a rick in him. He never looks that far away from a mistake. Mm-hmm. He's a good goalkeeper. Been amazing over the years. No one questions that. But 4 years ago, he was making mistakes in big games for France. So, I mean, that can happen as well, particularly with a high-energy England team. Now, I'll finish on that particular point by saying that whoever you pick on the right side as a forward for England, I think you probably need to accept that they're not going to get an awful lot of support from Kyle Walker if it is Kyle Walker in the back four, mm-hmm. because of the Mbappe factor.
So you've got to
pick your... I think also Rice and Henderson might be quite occupied with him at times as well. Mm-hmm. So I think you've got to pick your attacking right-sided player with that in mind. Now, Andy said, didn't he, that it'd be good to get someone who can get outside of Hernandez and really hit the byline and make it tough for him, rather than cut inside, because he would favour that. So maybe on that basis, it isn't Saka. But England have got an embarrassment of riches. I can see probably three forwards that are capable of playing that position that could absolutely terrorise Hernandez, who, you know, I don't want to be over the top about it, because obviously he's a decent pro and everything, but as a defender, he's a bit of a joke. I mean, he is a bit of a joke.
Fine. Okay, so, and as you say, Andy was saying that Saka possibly shouldn't start for the reasons you've just specified there.
Yeah.
Well, Raheem Sterling is flying back to Qatar and reportedly will rejoin the England squad in time for Saturday's game against France. He'd return home, of course, because, you know, his family had gone through that horrible ordeal with armed intruders breaking into their home. And I think, you know, everybody is aware of that. So an awful experience all round. But he will be back, as I say, according to reports, in time for Saturday's game against France. Now, that's obviously a difficult one for us to say on this podcast, because we know he's got the quality to start the game. It would just be a case of, you know, emotionally, would he be able to start? And we trust Southgate to make a good call on that. But he could well feature. And I'll tell you something, if you are the fullback and you've had Rashford to deal with, or even Saka to deal with for an hour, and you look up and he's going off and you see Raheem Sterling coming on, you think, oh, bloody hell.
England's bench is unreal. It's the best bench in the tournament.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some would say it's maybe Brazil, but I think England's bench is the best bench in the tournament. And you know, that's going to be key. If England's still in the game after an hour, there's a very, very good chance they'll win if they're brave enough. Because we're in an era of football now with starters and finishers. And I know that's a really kind of modern, horrible cliche thing to say, but it isn't. We're not living in the era now of football, particularly at tournament football, where you're like, oh, if someone gets injured, we'll sub them off and we'll do a like for like or whatever. We're talking about the fact that you can make so many substitutions now to affect the game. I promise you, these squads and these managers and these coaches, they're setting it up like that. They're going to say, it's not just about who we pick to start the game. We're talking exactly about what you're talking about there, Marcus. Last half an hour, maybe going into extra time, whatever. The quality England have got, it's the cavalry. It's coming over the hill over and over again. And France don't have that. They really don't. So if England start well enough, they will. It's the type of game where, although I'm saying it's a 50-50, which it is as we sit here now, as we move through the game, as it transpires, if it's still close, the longer it goes on being closer and closer and closer, the longer it goes on, England become more and more favourites. They do, because they've got players who can affect the game.
And that role coming off the bench and so on is one that Jack Grealish absolutely relishes. But you mentioned Declan Rice earlier. Good news is that he trained on Thursday. He missed Wednesday with illness, and I thought, well, bloody hell, you know, that's a spanner in the works. But he did train on Thursday, so he's in line to be absolutely fine. Callum Wilson had a thigh strain, but again, all being well, he probably wouldn't play, you would imagine. But hopefully he'll be absolutely fine for the match. Now, despite the magnitude of this game, the England team have been enjoying themselves. All the chat and all the little videos and so on we see coming from the camp have all been very, very enjoyable and very relaxed. The inflatable unicorns were back. And there were some inflatable crocodiles also added into the mix, which is very, very
Marcus,
nice
can I
see.
Check if any media outlet outside of us cares much about these unicorns and these inflatables? Well, I think we talk about them a lot. I just want to know, is that us taking the temperature of the country, or is that just us because we love it?
I think it's an absolute Carolina Reaper of a take, that is, a temperature. I think if you don't think those... No, it was a different show. It was a different time. Yeah. The unicorns are crucial. And I do think that if England can go all the way here, we will see maybe Saka or whoever's prominent. Because it was Maguire in the World Cup. It was Saka at the Euros. Is there somebody else who's going to be vying to be on the £50 note if England can win this tournament on that unicorn?
I love the idea of there being a massive celebration in Trafalgar Square and everyone turning up with their big inflatables just waving them around.
What, in the fountains, bobbing around in mid-December.
Yeah. And people who don't like England will hear this and go, oh, they're already talking about celebrating Trafalgar Square. No, it's not what I'm saying.
Clearly not. Absolutely. What we are going to talk about, though, before we go for a break, is Robbie Williams. He performed for the Three Lions.
No, I prefer a break. Yeah. If I have a choice.
Kieran Trippier said he was a nice guy, said he was down to earth. Apparently, Harry Maguire sorted it out.
What kind of power does he wield?
Well, apparently, he chatted to him in Manchester. He was like, oh, do you fancy performing for us? And he was like, well, I'm already going to the golf course to perform for Keezy and Gray, so why not? Yeah. Eh?
Pete's got this thing, hasn't he? That
chuck him five grand and he'll play you any indie song you want.
I think it might be a bit more of five
grand.
Well,
he was performing. He was singing "Don't Look Back in Anger" in Doha last night or the night before.
I mean, Robbie Williams, in many ways, has been a cultural touchstone for millions of people in this country. And I'm not trying to denigrate his achievements, because clearly he's made the very best of the talent he's got, and good on him. Right,
biggest gigs in the UK's history. Right. He claims
he's basically the country's most famous karaoke singer now. And good on him. I love karaoke, so good on him. Yeah. But I'm just saying, I'm not sure this is of consequence, really, in the show that we're talking about here today, Marcus, and I think you know that as well.
And I think it's time for a break, then.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. Right, Luke and I are, of course, bringing you all the latest news from the England camp ahead of tomorrow's World Cup quarterfinal against France. But if you want some more insight into how the French might shape up against old England, I recommend you listen to Tuesday's edition of On the Continent. Andy Brassel was joined by David Cartledge and Lars Sivertsen for a fantastic and fascinating discussion on how Les Bleus might shape up against Gareth's gang and some of their strengths and weaknesses. So get that episode below this one in your favourite podcast app. Right then, Big Lukey Moore, let's turn our eyes to our listeners, because we asked them how they see England versus France going. We've had tweets, we've had emails, we've had telegrams, we've had carrier pigeons turning up with all sorts of messages. And we'll start with this one from Anthony, who says, Harry Kane is going to immediately smash a long ranger first touch from the kickoff. It'll be a massive dig at Lloris, and it might even go in.
Yeah, that would be a really disrespectful thing to do to the goalkeeper that he's played with at club level for the last 10 years, or whatever it is. Why not?
Yeah, yeah.
I think Marissa, that might embolden France, though. Before Marissa, Marcus, I was going to say, I think it might embolden France, because as we all know, I've played Saturday and Sunday football. If the other team tries to score from kickoff, you've basically got the game won.
Yeah. Oh, right. Is it like that then, lads? Yeah. Yeah. From Marissa, who says, Harry Maguire to score a hat-trick of headers and Jordan Pickford to save a Kylian Mbappe penalty to preserve his clean sheet. I mean, that would be nice. I think we'll take that.
Based on that message, Marissa's mental health is so good that I'd love to know what her daily routine is, because that's coming in sincerely. Good for you. What a positive outlook on life. I wish I could have a bit of a dose of that.
Yeah.
Although I should say that on the penalty thing, a very, very large percentage of penalties have been missed at this World Cup. 42% according to what I've got here. So, you know, if there is a penalty based on this, you know, this kind of case study or data set of the World Cup alone, you're only really just over 1 in 2 chance of scoring.
Yeah, okay, interesting. Well, we've got a couple of mentioned penalties as we say there. We've also got this one from Chris to say Mbappe to miss an absolute sitter and to get a red card, but France still win. Got one from Max saying Mbappe to pull a hammy in the warm up.
Well, that would be, we never like to see a player injured.
No.
But I mean, maybe I'd make an exception for that one specific incident.
We've got a lot of people, you know, giving some realistic, some unrealistic predictions. I mean, Jeremy says England 4-3. It's going to be a knife fight, which I quite like.
I've heard a couple of other people in the build-up saying they think it might be a bit of a boxing match. It might be a bit of trading blows. You hit me, I hit you, and we'll see what goes on.
Yeah.
Now, I can see why people think that, because of the personnel that are going to be on display and because perhaps a perceived defensive frailties, particularly from France at fullback or whatever. But sometimes those kind of games don't manifest themselves. It feels to me like more often than not, they don't. And it goes the way that other people, the people don't expect. It becomes really cagey. It becomes really dumb. People get really disappointed. How do you actually think it's going to go?
Yeah, well, again, if you look at the two managers, when it comes to the crunch, managers tend to revert to type. And they're both more on the conservative side. But Deschamps' hand has maybe been slightly forced that they can't be too conservative at this World Cup. Because if they are, I mean, if you remember, he played Blaise Matuidi, I think, on the right side of the three last time around, which was a very defensive move. But he thought, if we shut up shop, our quality will shine through and we'll win it. And he was right.
In the World Cup before, you mean?
In 2018. I mean, you can be very critical and say, ah, it was boring and so on. Yeah, fine, but they won the World Cup. I'd love to win the World Cup in a very boring manner, quite frankly. You know, but, you know, England reverting to type would be a back three. So it would change the dynamic. It would change the shape, of course. But I don't think Southgate's going to do that. And I think Deschamps is going to line up as we expect. So it will be very, very interesting to see how it goes. The players will probably feel out the game and so on. But with a player like Kylian Mbappe, I don't think he's one to feel out the game because he knows what he can do. He is not really worried about what the opposition are going to do.
So he's not really going to follow some tactical guidance to like tuck in and really do this and
Do that, you know, but is he going to be offered much tactical guidance? I mean, perhaps in the modern day, yes, not like it was, you know, George Best in the sort of late 60s or whatever. I'll just give the ball to George and off you go, son. You know, the game is a bit different now. But with Mbappe, I think you would be mad to kind of shackle him a bit. You would say, right, everybody, when you can, get the ball to Kylian and Kylian, do your stuff. There's a little bit more to it than that, of course. But yeah, so it could be a back and forth. I'd be surprised if it was. But, you know, we saw it. France did have a bit of a back and forth against Argentina 4 years ago at the World Cup. And France won 4-3, although Aguero scored late on and it felt like France really gave it to them. So I think if the game does open up, that will suit Mbappe and it will suit Dembele. But you'd argue it would suit Foden and Kane and whoever might play on that right side.
Yeah, and it's about making the pitch big. For players like Foden to operate in. And also, if you go back to the whole thing we started talking about at the start of this with Theo Hernandez, you know, he's not a great defensive player. He's not a player who's in, I think, in great form either. And then what happens with wide defenders when they get involved in that kind of thing and they're playing against good players? They start to kind of look for safety, right? And for me, all my years of watching football, what tends to happen, and then you could also probably argue this with Jules Koundé as well in the right back position, who has also really a lot of the time plied his trade as a centre back. Mm-hmm. They start to tuck in. There's safety in the centre of the pitch. You don't want to be exposed one on one out there, so you start to tuck in and move a little bit more narrow, and that gives potentially England a lot of space. What it comes down to, I guess, to answer my own question, is whether England are brave enough to exploit that space. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the time, it doesn't really matter if a team's there for the taking. If you're going to be one of these wide forwards who just takes the easy option, plays it inside all the time, you have to be able to be brave enough to go and do it and execute as you to give yourself the better chance of winning the game. And if neither team does that, for some of the reasons you've stated, it could be just a bore fest. But I don't think it will be. And I think a lot of the time as well, it comes down to how early the first goal happens in the game, in any game, in knockout football. Because obviously, if you're a goal down, you may think, OK, let's not go two goals down within the next half an hour. But sooner or later, you're going to have to do something. And we saw that happen a lot in the final group games in this tournament, where teams just thought they knew what they had to do and they had to go and do it. This is what will happen here. So if it becomes people trying to jealously guard what they've got and not want to lose it for 90 minutes, then it could be boring. If there's a goal either way early, strap yourselves in.
Yeah, I think the reason why we think it could be boring is because sometimes these matches are, but to look at it in a more nuanced way and to work with what we've got with managers and players in question. Again, France under Deschamps, they would just shut up shop 4 years ago. That's how they did it. And Southgate used a lot of that template for the Euros and it nearly gave England the trophy. But I don't think Deschamps has got that option at the moment. And I think he knows that. And then with Southgate, the way England can come across very boring in matches is when they try and keep the ball like they did against the US and they try and sort of trudge through it, they're not going to be able to do that against France. You know, the centre-backs are not going to be able to pass it to each other because they'll probably be closed down a bit or whatever. So I think that we won't see that. It will just, can they take the chances and will we get many? I think it will be, it could be quite end to end, although I think France are probably better in possession than England, but that may well suit England if they try and hit them on the break. But let's finish this with Gary, who says, game goes to pens, Saka and Rashford redemption.
We'd all love to. What other way could you realistically end this show? We'd all love to see it. This is an English-based show. We're talking about the England team. No apology for ending on that. I think it's a fitting finale to today's episode.
But please get it done in 90 minutes, lads, for crying.
Yeah, I'd rather it didn't happen. Yeah.
Well, there we are, everybody. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble, part of the Acast Creator Network. Of course, tomorrow, the On the Continent gang will be back to give you a European perspective of those quarterfinals. So get that tomorrow in your favourite podcast app. And remember to subscribe so you never miss an episode. There we are. Thank you very much, Luke Moore.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend. And let's hope the boys do it on Saturday night. Come on, England.
Good morning, England.
Can you tell us something your mum doesn't know?
Yeah.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This season, prepare for every season with the Allbirds Mizzle Collection. These shoes were made for adventures in rain, shine, mist, or snow. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with your purchase.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? My dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.